Blog Talk Radio.
You miss me? I miss all of y'all. Hey. All y'all girls standing together like that. Keep hey. Shaking.
BYGP family, thank you so much for tuning in. I'm your host, Ashley Goodman, and this is the BYGP Locker Room Show. Tonight, I'll be speaking with Dr. Anthony Contos. Dr. Contos is the Assistant Research Director of the University of Pittsburgh Medical Center Sports Concussion Program. His research on sports-related concussions has been widely published in a number of peer-reviewed journals. He holds a PhD in kinesiology and sports psychology from Michigan State University. Dr. Contos, can you hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you fine, Ashley. Thank you.
Thanks. Well, I appreciate you coming on and giving your expertise on this hot topic. Concussions has been, you know, a major part of sports, so I definitely appreciate you coming on.
Thanks. It's my pleasure to be here. Thank you.
Good. So tell us a little bit about your background, what universities you've been at, and the title that you've held at those positions.
Sure. And I think, you know, also it's probably important to indicate that my background also goes into sport. I coached for 10 years in high school and soccer at the amateur levels and also played for a long time and in college. So I have kind of a sport background and direct experience seeing this injury as well. But as far as professional positions, I started my graduate work at Michigan State, and the reason I bring that up is that's where one of the individuals who developed the IMPACT cognitive test that many of your listeners are probably aware of, I went to grad school with him, and we were able to kind of grow up together academically, and that's Dr. Mickey Collins, who's also at the University of Pittsburgh.
Okay. So was he there before you had gotten there?
No, we actually were there at the same time, and kind of he was, I think, a year or so ahead of me, and he was in a different program, in a clinical psychology program. But we, you know, I kind of saw the ground floor of this whole idea of measuring and looking at concussion. I actually remember when he was testing like hundreds of Michigan State football players, and it would take like an hour and a half each athlete. It was really, you know, time consuming and really challenging because you had like 100, 120 kids you were testing back then. So,
yeah, that would definitely take some time measuring all of that. So then tell me, I have been reading up a little bit of what you're doing at UPMC. I've read that the new portable optical brain imaging device that can assess concussions, you know, that you've helped, you know, with that. Tell us some research that you've done over the years and what you're currently working on.
Yeah, well, since you bring that up, and I think you're referring to the, it's called a NIRS machine. It's a near-infrared spectroscopy, which is really like an optical imaging. Think of like a flashlight going through the hand, and you see the red reflecting the blood flow, and you can kind of do the same thing with the skull and the brain up to about a centimeter or a little bit less. And the idea is that particular project was kind of corroborating or correlating what we see with that imaging tool in the brain together with what we see cognitively on impairments using like the IMPACT test and symptoms. And so that was kind of an exciting study. Some other things we're doing is we're looking at head acceleration forces and concussion and their effects in youth ice hockey. We're just starting a big study right now with the NCAA. It's a three-year multi-site. There's 12 different universities involved in a study looking at concussion. Sort of how do we best assess it? How do we look at this injury in NCAA athletes and really get a better handle on it, which I think is really exciting that the NCAA and the U.S. government through the Department of Defense have funded that study, and there's also other groups that have put money towards that. A really neat one that we're doing, which I'm pretty excited about, is funded by the NFL and the GE General Electric Challenge Head Health Initiative, and that one is looking at a new sort of imaging tool. Some of your listeners probably heard of an MRI or a magnetic resonance imaging device, uh-huh. which is used to look at your knee and soft tissue, and you can also look at the brain. And there's a new way to take that image and sort of calculate a nice model that provides really what are called tracks. So looking at like a memory track or a vision track or, you know, word memory specific or something like that and seeing if it's damaged potentially. And we're going to look to see how that looks in youth, young kids with concussion and see if it gets sort of repaired over time as they recover.
That is very interesting. Did the NFL actually approach you on this or you know, University of Pittsburgh, or was it vice versa?
All of these studies that I mentioned are grant or research contract funded, and that means that we develop the ideas and then we submit them to essentially what is a competition for funding. And the studies I gave you were funded by governments or the NFL. We also have funding from the National Institutes of Health and the Department of Defense for our military work, which I'm going to focus on sports for the purposes of this call, but that's something else we do as well.
Wow. Well, it definitely sounds like you're busy with a lot of aspects of research and doing good work. Are you guys working with athletes at University of Pittsburgh, or is mostly what is being tested, is it just within athletes in the community?
Both. We have a clinical studies that include athletes from all over the place and might include athletes from Pittsburgh, you know, at the university, mm-hmm. or might include, you know, Carnegie Mellon or any kids that, you know, really come through the door with a concussion. But in addition, we do, you know, studies that target specific high schools or specific universities and things like that.
And then explain to me as well as the audience, what exactly a concussion is and some signs that an athlete may have suffered a concussion.
Yeah, we call this kind of the concussion 101. You kind of need to know what you're talking about before you can figure out what to do with it. And this
exactly.
is important information because I think there's a lot of misinformation out there. So I'll try to keep it brief and in simple terms. But basically think of, you know, the brain inside the skull, and it moves around in there, and there's cerebral spinal fluid kind of protecting it. But the skull's not mm-hmm. the smoothest place in the world. And also, we can experience forces. Sometimes we get hit in the head directly, like in a helmet-to-helmet tackle, or sometimes we get hit maybe down low and we get more of a whiplash effect. And both of those, direct or indirect, can cause a concussion. And what happens is those forces create a energy crisis in the brain that then results in a lot of the signs and symptoms of the injury. And there also can be some more significant damage, like with what we call axonal shearing, or where the neurons are damaged as well.
So then exactly what signs can you determine, parents, athletes, coaches, are you able to determine whether or not someone has suffered from a concussion?
Yeah, and that's really the challenge with this injury is it's not like an ankle where you can see the swelling and you can see the lack of range of motion and know immediately that someone has a first or second degree sprain. And concussion is a little more complicated and we don't grade it anymore. That's about 15 years, 10 years outdated. And what we do look at is specific symptoms. Headache is the most common symptom. Dizziness uh-huh. is actually a real good predictor of longer recovery. So if an athlete, if like a football player is hit on the field and they get up and they're, you know, really dizzy and kind of stumbling and they're shaking their head trying to get the cobwebs out, that's real predictive of a longer recovery. Interestingly, loss of consciousness or being knocked out, which back in my day was, you know, you had to have that really to have a concussion. We know that that only occurs in about 1 in 10 or 10% of concussions, which means back when I played, 90% of concussions weren't even recognized for what they are.
Interesting. Okay. So then, back in the day, it would probably show that concussions were less occurring than today.
Yeah, and it's interesting you bring that up because a lot of the newer research shows you know, this kind of increasing rate of injury and concussion, and really what that reflects predominantly is a better awareness of the injury, better diagnosis of the injury, and better assessment of it by, like, athletic trainers and sports medicine professionals.
Yeah, exactly. Now, I remember when you were actually an undergrad, you were actually my professor, and you spoke about when an athlete suffered from a concussion, the increase of getting another and reoccurring concussion. Tell us about the percentage of, you know, once you do get a concussion, the chances of getting another one.
Sure, and I think that one thing, you know, and that was back, let's see, I don't know, was it like 5 years ago, maybe, when you were in that class with me, or six,
exactly,
or something like that. But
yeah,
I can't remember. But when you think of concussions and what we've learned in the last 5 years, it's exceeded what we knew in the previous 20. And so the good news is we learned a lot. And one thing we learned is that no two concussions are alike. We learned they're kind of like snowflakes. And every concussion is different. So we've developed a model that we just published that shows there's different subtypes, like cognitive fatigue, a vestibular one, which involves dizziness and balance type issues, one that involves mostly vision type issues, another one that's mood anxiety related, and then other ones that are sleep, or one that we call post-traumatic migraine, and then the final one that involves the neck. Now, I say that because it's important to know that it depends on which kinds of injuries you have and what the effects of those might be, and we want to be sure to acknowledge that. But that said, you know, what we do know is that athletes who have multiple injuries, particularly in a short time span, and that's usually meaning that they had an injury that was poorly managed, it was really one injury, and they kept kind of re-injuring it, those athletes can then be at some increased risk for problems down the road, meaning, you know, greater likelihood that a lower threshold of injury or force might cause a concussion. But there's really not a lot of good research on, you know, how many is too many, and I think the real issue here is that each concussion is so unique and individual that it's hard to put a number on it.
Okay, that is, I'm glad that you clarified that, because, you know, I still have the indication that that was true, but I'm glad that you did clarify it. Now, what are, you know, with parents, coaches, and athletes, what are some of the concerns about concussions? You know, why should we be concerned and worried about this?
Well, frankly, I think a lot of the concern has come from, you know, the media hype and some of the knee-jerk reactions out there, also some high-profile cases. And then other issues that sort of link with concussions, such as CTE, which some of your listeners may have heard of, chronic traumatic encephalopathy. It used to be called punch drunk or pugilistic dementia, which really hasn't been directly linked to concussions yet, but if you read stories in the, like, media, you'd think that it was a fact, and that if you play sports like football or soccer, you definitely develop this syndrome. I think, first of all, it's important to note that there's just a lot of these concerns that are sort of not founded in fact, but rather more in hype. We like to think of it more as a continuum, and 15 to 20 years ago, no one was talking about this injury. It wasn't a big deal. No one was doing much about it. It wasn't really dealt with. I mean, it was just kind of like, yeah, you get hit in the head, you get your bell rung, you know, and you move on and you go back in and play. Now we've kind of swung all the way to the other side where, you know, parents are afraid of the injury without really understanding it. There's a lot of misinformation about the effects of the injury and, you know, how, like, if I play a sport, I'll have a concussion and then later develop CTE. And there's all these kind of, again, sort of exaggerations of what the reality is. And I think there's that misinformation creates a lot of the concern. That said, you know, contact sports always carry a risk of injury, and sometimes those injuries involve the head. And if we do a good job, we can minimize that risk and then properly manage these athletes so that we can get them safely back to play.
And that, I definitely appreciate you bringing up the media and you know, making sure that all of our listeners, as well as myself, is aware that it doesn't correlate necessarily. Right now, we don't have enough evidence. So thank you for making that clear for our listeners. Now, in your opinion, should there be what protocol should an athlete who maybe has gotten a concussion, you know, how should they go about that process? Should they see a physician? I mean, how would you go about that?
Well, my first, you know, suggestion is whenever you have a a concussion or an injury, particularly one with really obvious and sort of significant signs and symptoms, you're always going to want to err on the side of caution and make sure you get seen right away by a medical professional. And soon thereafter, you want to get – and that's to minimize any, like, real traumatic type, you know, subdural bleeds and things that could be going on that are more significant. But once you've realized that you have a concussion and that's what you're diagnosed with, it's critical to get specialized care, you know, whether it's a neuropsychologist, a sports medicine doctor, or a neurologist who specializes in concussion. For the same reason you wouldn't go to, you know, someone who does the ankle when you have a knee injury, or you know, you wouldn't go see your pediatrician, you know, for something that, you know, it's for an adult. So we want to be very specific in saying that, yeah, you want to find the right people, and also one that's backed by a team that has physical therapists, vestibular therapists, athletic trainers, rehab docs, and other team members and resources at their disposal. And then I think really the question is, you know, when is it kind of maybe safe to return to play? Is that part of your question as well?
Well, yeah, and I was going to get to that. You know, in your opinion, how should that process of gradually getting back into playing safely, of course, how should that go? What should be the measurements within that?
Yeah, and that's really pretty well established in the literature and the clinical guidelines that are out there, and that's a good thing because, you know, we need those kind of guidelines to drive how we approach this injury. The way it is now is essentially you need to be symptom-free and then have no, you know, impairments like cognitive or vestibular, which, again, is that balance, dizziness, maybe some vision integration issues at rest. So that means just you're at the clinic, you take, like, maybe a computerized test, you perform some, you know, walking tasks and some other things and some measures we have. And then also we want to do those after exertion. So we want to physically exert you, and not just in the way of, like, maybe riding a bike, but the way you might be in sport, like lateral movement, dynamic movement, kind of mimicking what you might do in sport, and then see, do you have those symptoms and or impairments return? And if you do, of course, then we would, you know, kind of go back a little bit. And assuming that you're progressing in a nice linear fashion, which doesn't always happen, then you go into a gradual return to full contact, which is the last, you know, kind of piece to the puzzle.
And then I was also reading in some of your articles and everything of that nature that you did actually say that between youth athletes within playing football, that 11 and 10-year-olds were actually suffering concussions more than 8 to 9-year-olds, especially in specific positions such as quarterback, linebacker, running back. Now, why was that?
Yeah, you're referencing a study we published in Journal of Pediatrics, and what that study showed, and that was actually funded by the NFL, was that when we looked at those two age groups, so we looked at kids from 8 to 12, and we separated them into older, 11 and 12, and then 8, 9, and 10-year-olds. And what we found is that the 8, 9, and 10-year-olds, the contact and really the number of concussions was at a very low rate. They're just not doing a lot in the way of big hits and tackling. You're not seeing a lot of sort of real high velocities in running or collisions and things like that. It's kind of like we call it bobblehead, you know, syndrome because the kids' helmets are so giant, they're barely moving around. It's a different thing, right? And they almost shy away from contact a little bit. In contrast, the 11- and 12-year-olds, you start to get some larger boys, faster boys, and also you get one or two players on a team that tended to be, in our observations, skilled, and those players were put in the position like a middle linebacker type position or quarterback, which I think, frankly, you know, would increase their exposure because they're playing more downs and they're in a position where they're constantly being tackled or doing the tackling. So it was a little
bit,
you know, one of those things was one of the findings from that study.
That's interesting. So then what would you say, how to prevent or prepare for a concussion? I mean, you say about tackling, learning how to tackle properly. I mean, what else could parents and coaches do to help prevent this and prepare for this?
Yeah, and I think you just hit the nail on the head. You know, the first thing is good tackling technique and teaching that, especially in a sport like football, but also in other sports, whether you're heading the soccer ball, doing that properly and hockey checking, et cetera, so it's not just football. But there's a new study out by Don Comstock who suggests that neck strength may also play a role, meaning that if you have a stronger neck, that may mitigate the risk for concussion. Some have suggested that a reaction time and being able to sort of fall in a more effective manner or avoid a hit can also play a role. But it's important that we realize that you can't prevent concussion totally. There's no such thing as concussion prevention, you know, 100%. No helmet is concussion proof. And it's more important that we really identify athletes that are at risk for poor outcomes following, you know, the injury. Those with maybe migraine history, history of concussion, especially those that weren't managed properly, so we can minimize the effects of the injury and target treatment to those subtypes I mentioned earlier.
Interesting. So then, have you seen from youth to high school, college level, professional, or you know, within football, what level have you seen more concussions occurring at that youth level, high school level, or college level?
Well, I think it's really too early to say for the youth because, frankly, our study is the only published study of youth football at that 8 to 12 range, and we need more data.
Okay.
We need more studies. But I think what we're seeing is that, you know, most of the risk occurs in games. I think it's more important maybe to think in terms of when do these injuries happen. And they happen more in games than in practices,
okay,
which is actually interesting because practice is where you learn good technique. Ironically, you know, some organizations have actually limited contact practices to try to reduce concussion risk, but what our research suggests is that it's really more about the games and teaching the technique and practice, and if we eliminate those, we may actually be reducing our opportunities to learn, you know, how to better tackle. I kind of liken it to imagine someone who's had, you know, driver's ed, and instead of actually taking the course, they just go straight to the course and try to drive instead of taking the class, and that wouldn't be good, so...
Absolutely. I'm so glad that you did bring that up because the NFL as well as the NCAA have made, you know, changes on how much you can have contact within practices. So that's very interesting that you said that it happens more within games. Now, have you brought that, you know, that knowledge and that information to that organization, to the NCAA and NFL?
Well, I mean, we do that through our publications and our presentations, and you know,
okay,
they're aware of this work. I think one thing to bear in mind is that when we talk about an 8- to 12-year-old player,
mm-hmm,
that's not an NFL player. And so
yeah,
those limits on contact that you're at the higher levels are probably a little bit more geared towards the fact that you have kids fighting for positions or a professional fighting for a job and career than, you know, little kids learning how to play properly.
I gotcha. Then that totally makes sense. That makes definitely sense. Now, I don't know too many players that have used concussion caps, but what's your opinion on them?
When you say caps, are you referring to the actual number of concussions, or what are you referring to?
So, you know, there's now been some companies that are designing these caps that go into the helmets.
Oh,
players,
okay, the liners. Yeah, okay. Yeah.
Exactly.
Sure. First of all, the liners, the research on the liners right now is limited to laboratory studies on do they minimize, like, the impacts in these helmet tests. And the research shows that some of them actually minimize that impact in the, like, you know, the dummies that they use for, like, crash test dummy stuff.
Okay.
However, there's no research that suggests that those wearing those caps is going to reduce concussion in an actual, you know, human, in an actual athlete. And I think the important thing to bear in mind here is that concussion doesn't necessarily involve that nice, simple, straight-line force. Oftentimes it's rotational, and a cap will not in any way really affect that rotational component of a force, nor will a helmet to too much of an extent because that force is based on, you know, just rotating the head very quickly, and that's not something that a cap or really, a helmet necessarily is going to prevent.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so, well, then that's great. Because, you know, I've been approached, you know, by different companies of how they explain it and everything, and they've said they've been tested and NFL tested and all of this, and, you know, I just wasn't aware of you know, much research on them, so I wanted to ask you about that. But that definitely
makes
sense.
Well, it's important piece of information, especially for, you know, kids and athletes out there that are listening to this, because, you know, there's a lot of claims out there about concussion devices that prevent concussion, and you know, I caution all the listeners that you can't prevent this injury with any particular helmet or cap. The real idea is that, you know, learning to tackle better and risk factors and understanding those things are going to be much more, you know, effective strategies, and that a helmet can only reduce it, or a cap to a certain extent and no more.
Okay, yeah, that's definitely good. I'm glad you cleared that up. Do you think there should be more treatment for players who have played, you know, within college NCAA or within professional NFL, that they should be reviewed after they're done playing, of, you know, having tested and brain tested on certain things?
Well, I think, you know, with regards to how we manage this injury, I think both the NFL and NCAA are you know, doing a good job with policies to making sure that individuals are getting baseline tested before the season when they're quote, you know, healthy or not injured, and that allows us to then look at how they look post-injury compared to themselves as opposed to, you know, just the other people, and I think that's a good practice. And I think the identification of this injury, the NFL has instituted like spotters to, you know, eight athletic trainers to look for the injury down the field, and I think both groups, as well as other groups, youth sports and others, a great example is USA Football through the NFL as well, is doing a great job by educating and informing through Heads Up program, which helps coaches, parents, and athletes learn about this injury and identify the signs and symptoms. And, you know, there's just better awareness now, and I think that the NCAA and NFL are helping to kind of show, lead the way in part with the approach to the injury, the significance, and recognizing that this is a very important thing, and we want to get you know, our athletes safely back to play.
Absolutely, that is definitely key. So then, in your opinion, I mean, you've studied this, you've researched this, with your expertise, what advice would you give athletes, families, and coaches that would help them stay safe, but also allow the athletes to play the game that they love?
Yeah. You know, another great question, and I'll go back to some of the points I've made and add a couple new ones. One is, again, learn how to play the sport properly and safely through good coaching technique and repetition of proper tackling, you know, tucking and all that good stuff, keeping the head out of the tackle. One thing we didn't touch on, which is important, I think particularly in youth and high school, is to make sure that the protective equipment, the helmets and pads and such, are properly fitting, and that the you know, they're secure to the point where they're safe, and you don't want, like, the loose helmet flopping around or coming off during play, et cetera. For parents, you know, I think they need to learn how to identify this injury in their kid, and sometimes it's not so obvious. You know, a kid may not complain about an injury or, I mean, a headache or other symptoms, and they may have subtle changes in behavior, like they may be quieter than usual or louder than usual or more impulsive or maybe even hostile or just change in personality and things like this. And, you know, parents can be aware of those and also the risk factors that their kids might have, such as, you know, previous injuries, their age, sex, migraine history, things like that. And, you know, ultimately the critical thing is whenever we're in doubt with an athlete, we're not sure if that athlete's concussed, that, you know, the player doesn't really remember, you know, the hit or anything. They seem okay, but we're not sure. You know, you always want to sit those kids out until they're properly evaluated and can be returned to play in a safe manner.
That is great. That's great stuff. Thank you, Dr. Kotos, so much for joining me and explaining to our listeners about this important topic and helping us out to, you know, be more aware of concussions and everything of that nature.
Yeah. It was my pleasure, Ashley, and, you know, I wish you all the best. And again, you know, this injury is, just to summarize, it's something that we can manage properly and get kids safely back to play. And it's also, you know, sports are great for kids and being physically active and fit and all the benefits therein. And I hope we can just learn to sort of balance that with the risk with any contact sport.
Absolutely. That was great. That was fantastic. I'm glad that you said keep on playing sports. We're not telling you to stop whatsoever. So thank you, Dr. Kotos, and I will touch base with you soon.
Thank you.
Thanks. Guys, we hope you got a lot out of listening to Dr. Kontos and the information he gave regarding concussions. We have some great things going on, and football season is just around the corner, which BYGP will be plenty busy attending high school games, college, and pro games. So please check us out at www.beforeyougopro for more information, and if you have not checked out our book, definitely do. On Thursday, tune in at 6:30 p.m. We will be speaking with Coach John Hare, who is the DB coach for a brand-new football program at Arizona Christian University, which is an NAIA program. He will speak to us about what ACU has to offer and why you don't always have to play at a big-time school to live out your dreams. You guys won't want to miss this type of information that you get here at the BYGP Locker Room Show. This is Ashley Goodman signing off for BYGP and the rest of the BYGP team. Good night, guys.
You miss me?
Oh, God. I cannot. Oh, my God, my voice. You should hear it. Thank you.